This Week in Tennis.
Hey, Craig. Season 16, Episode 1. Here we go. You ready for the second week of the Australian Open?
Oh, I am. And it's, you know, is it Episode 1 or is it Episode, like, 1.5? Because we gave this a go last week and we got... I kind of let down by some software problems, right?
I believe it was major software problems. Mostly the problem was the guy running the software. But we've figured it all out. And here we are, episode 1.5. Season 16 of This Week in Tennis is on the way. You know, I got to tell you, Jordan Thompson, he pops off sometimes, doesn't he? He likes to do that. He's an Australian tennis player. Australians speak their minds. And I really like that about him. He claims that the Australian Open is the wokest tennis tournament on the circuit. Can you imagine someone from your own country speaking that way about your own tournament? Craig, what is this world coming to?
Well, I mean, we've probably had that before because we've had Benoit Paire on the tour for quite a while. He's quite outspoken about, well, everything. But I can't imagine coming to the UK for Wimbledon and one of the British players having any sort of negative thing to say about the tournament here. I think it's very difficult to listen to someone who comes from that place, who's probably profited greatly from wild cards, qualifiers, you know, entry into this tournament where they've backed this guy to come and play there, and they've backed him with money, real money, because you know the money you get for losing in the first round of these things. So for him to come out and be really critical in that way is ambitious, if not foolish.
I was just going to say foolhardy. You know, you have to, I totally get what he's saying. You know, they changed some of the rules. They're allowing spectators to wander around the courts no matter what time or what's happening during points. They're allowing all kinds of things now, and it kind of has upset a lot of people. And he just spoke out. But what about Boo and Novak Djokovic the way they have? They've massacred him. Don't they realize that this thing, this whole vaccination thing is over? And we don't need to be, you know, vilifying anyone or for making obviously what seems now to be the right move. I don't get why they would hoot on a 10-time champion the way they do. Doesn't make sense to me, Craig.
I mean, there's probably plenty of reasons why people don't like him. The fact that he wins a lot is one of them. You know, sometimes people don't like somebody who comes and wins all the time.
Right.
As you said, like, he's won there. Like, it's 10 times champion, but he's been dominant there for more than a decade, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Probably going on more than 15 years, probably approaching 20 years. He's really been one of the dominant individuals there. So people are probably starting to tire of seeing him dominate proceedings there. But yeah, I mean, it is a bit odd. You know, you never saw Rafael Nadal getting booed when he turned up at Paris or Federer when he turned up in London. I think you do have a different crowd in Australia. I mean, people talk about the crowd at the Open, and you'll know the crowd at the Open can be crazy on Arthur Ashe.
Oh, yeah.
You have a real crazy crowd. They'll pick someone they like and they'll boo the other person out of the building. And I think in Australia, you're starting to see elements of that. And for whatever reason, a lot of people there have decided that they don't view Novak Djokovic the same way the French viewed Rafael Nadal. And I think they're really hankering for some kind of change in tennis at the top end. But be careful what you wish for.
I know, right? But, you know, Novak has made some statements this week about how his relationship with the current younger crew is a lot better than, say, Nadal and Federer's was with him. But you know what? Revisionist history is pretty interesting. You know, what I will say is this. Maybe what you should have done is not mock those guys during rain delays and trying to imitate their serves and clowning people before you ever won anything. You know, that's a big problem with people like Rafael Nadal and with Roger Federer. You know, those guys are traditionalists. Novak is not. Do you remember when he showed up at the U.S. Open, his parents were wearing the exact same kit he was? I mean, there's a lot of little things, but mostly they just don't like him because of the mockery. And, you know, it might have been fun and tongue-in-cheek, but he could have picked somebody else maybe. Maybe that's what it is. But one thing is clear, they're not happy with him. But you know who they're not booing down in Australia, Craig? They're not booing the American men because only one of them is left. They're all gone after the third. Most of them didn't even get past the second round, Craig. This is a group that they talk so much about how many are ranked in the top 100, and they're all taking a Pasadena early, a little early vacation, Craig.
Well, I know how that feels, Phil, because being British, we got to the third round and there was only one player left in either draw. And that's been the way it has been with British tennis for some time, but with American tennis, I do think you have concerns there because you do have a lot of highly ranked players in that men's side. And it's disappointing to see Ben Shelton go out, Tommy Paul go out. It's, you know, Tiafoe, another one who's ranked in the top 20. And, you know, I think, how many have you got in the top 20? Four, five now?
Probably five, yeah.
And then you've got young Corda sort of in the top 30 as well. And but then when you look at the results, there are players who have lost that you'd have expected not to win. I didn't fancy Korda up against Rublev, for example. Rublev's just very, very solid. He's not going to win the tournament, in my opinion. But he's just, you know, too consistent in what he does at a high level for somebody like Korda. And it's the same, like, as you go down. I was a little bit disappointed. In Tommy Paul, I thought losing 6-love in that fifth set to Kecmanovic, pronunciation of that's poor, Kecmanovic, because Tommy Paul, he'd been on a run, and I think he lost out in that fourth set tiebreaker, and he was just done. And I was disappointed because I really thought Tommy had a good win over Jack Draper the round before, and I did kind of feel like... He might have given Alcaraz more of a challenge as well. When you know, we've historically seen Tommy Paul cause Alcaraz a few problems in the way that he plays than Kecmanovic did. And yeah, that was a disappointing one for me. But you're right, you know, how can you boo someone if they're not there? And the American men have really not delivered at this tournament, with the exception of Fritz, who obviously is still in, and he plays Djokovic next. And historically, we've seen how that tends to end.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a second. But you know what? It's taxi time for those boys. You know, they talk a lot of crap. They run their mouth. They chirp a lot on court. They flash in signals and having themselves a great old time, you know, showboating in front of their entourages. But at the end of the day, Ben Shelton won two consecutive matches this twice last year. I'm sorry, three times. Twice before the U.S. Once before the U.S. Open, and then once after. So three times out of I don't know how many tournaments he played. You know, he's got that big game. But there's a little bit of dog in him. And sometimes when you like to showboat, you get beat. Because that guy on the other end of the net doesn't like it. And he doesn't like it when you're whispering under your breath, "You suck," and all these other little shenanigans that Benny Boy is pulling. Francis Tiafoe, Francis, I still think he probably, of all of them, has the best chance to win a major because no one will see it coming. Because after another 4 or 5 weeks, the only person in the United States that's going to be talking about Francis Tiafoe anywhere will be me whenever he's playing, because it helps my job, because, you know, it fills some content. But they were embarrassing Tommy Paul. Come on. Tommy should have waxed that kid. You know what? Tommy gave up. That's a problem. That's why no one ever talks about him to win in majors, because sometimes he does. I don't know what the deal is, but it seems to me maybe carrying around that camera for his significant other is probably weighing him down, maybe. Who knows? You know, I don't know. But what I do know is Taylor Fritz has a big match on Monday night. It'll be the match right after Coco Gauff's, and we'll get into that one in a minute. We're going to get right into predictions. We're going to and get out of here because Craig has another meeting today. But Taylor Fritz, Novak Djokovic, as you alluded to, the Joker is 8-0 lifetime against Taylor Fritz. And Fritz has won two sets in those eight matches, both times, coming at the Australian Open in 2021. Overwhelming favorite here, Craig. Money line is almost impossible to bet on. I think it's 898, 950, 10-1 favorite. However, you can get a much better score if you play Djokovic to win straight up 3-0. What do you like about this one, Craig? Do you think that Taylor Fritz can even take a set off Novak?
About two rounds ago, I would have said yes when Djokovic looked out of form and he was not timing the ball particularly well and guys were getting at him. That seems to have completely evaporated in the space of two matches where, particularly against Mayorino the other day, he made him go away for, what was it, three games in total.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what Taylor Fritz can bring. I don't even know if Taylor Fritz believes that he can win a set, let alone the match. What do you do against this guy? I mean, since the last time he won a set in 2001, he's been iced five times for, you know, no set. And that includes, you know, four of those five matches were on hard courts.
One at the US Open, straight sets.
Yeah, and it was very comfortable straight sets as well. With, oh, I know. 1-4-4, you know, Fritz never ever really looked like he had a foot in the match at all. I don't know what Fritz is going to, he's got to do something different. He can't come out there and play the way that he normally plays and expect to beat Djokovic.
I wonder what his Instagram girlfriend is going to do if he beats him. You know, she promised to eat an entire jar of Vegelite if he won his last match. What will she do for a victory over Novak?
Well, it's not going to matter because he's not going to beat Djokovic unless Djokovic has to retire for some reason.
That's exactly right.
I can't see him winning at tennis because he's simply, let's put it out there, he's not as good as Djokovic and he's never going to be on the level that Djokovic is on. Even on his best day. I don't see him beating Djokovic.
And that goes for 99% of the tour also. And it's not just Taylor Fritz. But I will say this. I have one out there. I'll be posting up three picks for today's matches. This is one of them. And I decided to go straight up 3-0 because I think he just waxes him. You know, Novak also looks pissed off. You know, it's very scary to watch him because he's not only pissed off, but he's playfully pissed off. You know what I mean? He's smiling because he knows he's not going to have any issues. Taylor Fritz, in his interview yesterday, he says, you know what? I have to do the same thing I did the last time because I played him here because I was able to win two sets. He said, but I've been playing great against him. Well, okay, that sounds good to you. Then that's good to me. I'm going to take Novak to win this one straight up. Now, you mentioned Andrei Rublev. He's got the last match of the night on Rod Laver, and he's got a tough one with Jannik Sinner. Sinner's a 4-1 favorite just about everywhere you look. He has a 4-2 lifetime history over Rublev. However, this is a little different on a hard court where he's only 2-1. They've played a couple of tiebreakers. They've played some competitive matches. Rublev is coming off a match, Herculean victory, to be honest. Who takes this match, Sinner or Rublev?
I think this is a case that over time, Jannik Sinner has gotten better. He's gotten more consistent. He's dialed in now. He's focused. I like Jannik Sinner here. And the betting obviously sees that as well. They think that he's a better player. I think Rublev, he's a few years older, he's mid-20s. I kind of feel with Rublev that he's hit his ceiling. I don't see him getting better. I don't see him, for me, he's the new David Ferrer. He's very consistent at what he does. It's very, very nice to watch. If you want consistency in a guy that is going to get to quarterfinals of slams and he's going to get to semifinals of smaller events, Rublev's your guy, but he doesn't look to me like he's a winner. And when he comes up against somebody who looks like they might be a winner, he kind of tends to melt a little bit. And I think that's what we're going to see here. I think Sinner, it rhymes with it. Sinner, he's a winner. He's going to be a winner eventually if he keeps playing the way he does and he keeps dialed in the way that he has been for the last 6 months. I mean, you criticized this guy heavily last year and said it was never going to happen. But I think that he's starting to change your mind now. I think that he's starting to move away from all the modeling shoots and the magazine covers, and he's going to play some tennis. And he's actually quite good at the tennis. And I think if he could change your mind, I think he could change a lot of people's minds. And I think he could be the guy to get to the final here in this part of the draw. I think he could be the guy to shock Novak Djokovic in the semi-final if he's playing his best tennis.
That's exactly right. You know what? He has changed my mind. I like the way he approached this event. And he's even said it himself. You've heard him. All of us have. He knows. You know? He knows he probably was spending a little extra time doing some things he shouldn't have been doing. But he also has a great support team. You know, Darren Cahill's done a great job with him. Thing I'm most impressed about with this fortnight is how well he's returned. He's like the fourth on the list of breakpoints. He's broken like serve like 24 times already. So he's jumping. The thing is though about this match, Craig, is that Sinner hasn't been really challenged at all. He didn't play up any warm-up events leading up to this. The last time he played before this event was with his buddy Carlos Alcaraz in an exhibition. I think Rublev can take a set off him. I made a prediction in the article that I wrote where I believe he'll win over 17 and a half games. I think this is going to go four sets. I think Sinner's going to get there. But I think that Rublev, I like the way he fought, man, against. I mean, he fought so hard, brother. I like this kid. He's such a nice kid. But more importantly, he's also a tough kid. But like you say, there's this block. And I don't know what it is to get him past that where he can win these matches. But the bottom line is he had a fight with Demonur, and Demonur went bye-bye. Sinner might too, though. Sinner's young. You know, last year he would have went away in a push, you know? But I don't know now. So I would say Sinner's going to win this match. But I also think Rublev wins more than 17 and a half games, Craig.
Yeah, I think you're right. Rublev's not going to go away easily.
No.
When I said that he won't win the match, I didn't mean he was going to get flushed in three sets. He's going to stick around, and he might win the first set, or he might get back to 1-1, or it might be five sets. He's tough, like David Ferrer was. He's going to stick around as long as he can. He's going to make it difficult. But I think it's a case that if Sinner's level goes up, he's got too many shots for Rublev to be able to play the way that Rublev plays. I think that Rublev doesn't have that arsenal of shots that he could blow Sinner away in the same way that it could work in reverse if things start to go in Sinner's favor. He's just got some lovely shots that he can play, some real weapons that Rublev doesn't have, and running the ball down and keeping it in play is not going to stop Sinner if he could hit his high level.
You know, that's exactly right. You know, Rublev went up against Demonur, and that was a matchup between two guys without a big weapon, other than their spunk, their tenacity, and of course their returns, which are pretty good. Rublev is right at the top on the returns, though, as is Sinner. Like I said, I think it's four sets at least. I just wanted to make sure you added that, and I'm glad that you did, because. When if I wouldn't have said a word, Most people would have thought you'd have walked off the floor with him 4-3-0, but not a chance. I think Sinner's good. You know, this isn't. There's a the two matches that will be played tomorrow, Tuesday night, down under. Hurkacz and Medvedev. Hurkacz, that was your guy. The podcast that didn't work out for us.
I'm glad you remember that, because I was going to bring it up in a second and say my guy's still here.
Yeah, your guy is. Do you remember who I picked?
You picked Sinner.
I did pick Sinner, didn't I?
Yeah, so both those guys are still here at the last eight. So, you know, those were guys that we picked that basically weren't Novak Djokovic.
Because you have to, right? Because if you're going to bet on tennis, you have to pick someone outside of Novak Djokovic.
If you want to make money, sure. But this is really interesting, because you've got statistically over the last 52 weeks, the last year, you've got the best service player against the best return player.
I know, right?
Tour. But if you look at the stats, the cat leads 3-2. So Hubert Hurkacz is 3-2 against Medvedev, and he's won the last two. Okay, one of them was on grass where...
Two of them were.
But the last two, out of the last two, one of those was on grass, because it was at Halle.
Yep.
And that really does favor the big booming serve, because this guy's got a killer serve.
Big serve.
Why he's on top of the serve stats for the last year, with John Isner now gone. But this guy, you need to break his serve. You need to get on top of him. He's going to come forward and volley as well. He's going to win a lot of free points on that serve. This will be difficult for Medvedev, I think. What a wonderful player. What a wonderful returner of the ball. But this is a, you know, best returner versus best server. He's not going to have faced anything like this up to this point in the tournament. So it's going to be really interesting. What he doesn't want, and you're going to know this straight away, is, and we're going to see a lot of this, I think, is he doesn't want tie breaks, because you don't want to get into a tie break with a guy like Hurkacz. It's like getting into a tie break with John Isner. He's going to win so many free points. It's going to be very, very difficult. If Hurkacz can keep dragging Medvedev into tie breaks, he's going to win sets in this match. So a lot's going to depend on how quickly Medvedev can get on top of him, get a break, and hold that break throughout the set. Because Hurkacz doesn't generally break back a lot. If you look at his return stats on the tour, he's down in the 70s. But this is a top 10 guy. This is a top player because of how good he is on serve. So I still think this could be, if he serves well, this could be a Hurkacz win. And the bookmaker will give you good money on that.
I would think so. You know, right now, those odds, and we haven't even started, really. 2-1. Hurkacz is a 2-1 underdog to a player he could beat, to a player who hasn't always played well here, although he did make two finals. You know, he's another one, he being Medvedev, that decided to skip. I can't even speak now, Craig. He skipped all the warm-ups. And it seems to have worked out for him. However, you know, one of the you mentioned a 70% break rate, and that's fair. But let me say this. He has an aggressive return game. Because he's got a big serve, he can afford to do that. And Medvedev has a nice serve, a good serve, above average serve, but it's not a monster. Hurkacz can swing at this a couple times. And if he gets a couple of breaks, he can finish him off. I think this goes the distance, though. But I also think that if it gets into a tiebreaker, Hurkacz is going to bury them. So if you're playing or bury him. So if you're going to play any in-game or live betting, you're going to look for that situation with Hurkacz. But I just like his game a lot. He has bigger serve than Sinner. Sinner doesn't always go for his serve. Hurkacz always does. But he's more than just say, for example, Riley Opelka, for example, who just hits big bombs and hopes for the best. Hurkacz can break him. He can also stay out in extended rallies. However, that's probably something he wants to avoid. Sort of like the next match, Alexander Zverev, Carlos Alcaraz. Zverev is a 4-1 underdog in a lot of places. What do you think here? Does he have a puncher's chance against Carlito because he is 4-3 lifetime? They are 500 against each other on hard courts. Zverev was headed toward a final or possibly even winning one when he got hurt in Paris. What do you think? Can Zverev pull off the upset here?
Why not? I mean, I've watched a little bit of Alcaraz, and he's played some really beautiful tennis. He looked off it towards the end of last year. I think he might have been struggling with a few injuries. He didn't look like the player we saw in the first part of last season. But he dropped a set earlier on this tournament, I think, to, it may have been Sonego in the second round. Mm-hmm. And then he played a wild card, I'm sure, that match. There was a retirement in as well in the third round. So he's had a little bit of time off the court, which has probably been beneficial to him, but he's not really been challenged yet. Zverev had that really difficult match this morning against Cam Norrie, where I thought he made a lot more difficulties in that match for himself than he was being presented by Norrie. So it's going to be, for me, Alcaraz is going to win on the basis of what I've seen, unless Zverev really turns it on. And he can. We know he can. We know this guy's capable. He's always been on the brink of getting to finals and whatnot. But I've just seen enough of Alcaraz to think he's going to cause him problems. I'd like to think I'm wrong, but if we're looking for a dog to win a match, I don't think it's going to be this one.
Yeah, Zverev. I think Zverev can push him, but he's got to serve. He really has to serve. The other thing he has to stay away from is Carlos's antics. He's going to be the heavy favorite. You know, now Zverev has another court case coming up in May. You know, we're going to talk about a lot of these things next week, but I'm just waiting to confirm something from the ATP Tour before I say anything publicly. But let me just say, you want to tune in to next week's show because the old man's going to get off on somebody. That's a fact. I'm a little disappointed in some things, and I'm going to let a couple people know it. Anyway, the bottom line here, though, I think he can take a set. I think he can win. But I don't know if I would back that victory. You know, Carlos, he skipped the old warm-ups himself. I can't say forego. I don't know what happened there. My brain's not working. But at the end of the day, Craig, Carlos has a monster game. You know, it sounds like a broken record, but I'm going to say it anyway. This kid goes from defense to attack faster than I've ever seen anyone do that. With the, you know, there's a couple players out there who are trying to do that, but he does it very well. And that's because he's got that riverboat gambler mentality. You know, he's either going to go big or he's going to go home. But he's going to go big most of the time. Two seasons ago, every single match he played in, he won at least one set. There's ways to get to him. What you have to do is serve, and you have to be aggressive as hell and take some chances. And I'm not so sure Zverev is going to do that. I don't think he's quick enough to attack the net against these big ground strokes of Alcaraz. I think Alcaraz would enjoy seeing Zverev come out, traipse up to the net. I think Carlos wins this one in five sets. I think Zverev pushes him, though. I think Zverev has to because he's played him very tough, Craig.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I don't know if he's got what it takes to get this one over the line. I think it's going to be difficult. I really do. I don't think, if I'm betting the dog in this round, I'm probably betting her cats, which, I mentioned last week on the show that we didn't air. He's probably the dog that I'm backing for this round. I don't like Fritz. I'm not sure on Rublev. That's a very difficult matchup for Rublev. And then, when you go to that bottom match, I'm not fancying Zverev over Alcaraz. I think I'll let Hurkacz over Medvedev if any of these dogs are going to win.
There you go. You know, my piece will be published in a few minutes probably. And I published three prediction pieces so far for the Australian Open. I gave out 9 underdogs and hit 7 of them. There won't be an underdog on that card. And it's a mixed card between the girls and the guys. And we have the girls, Matt, the ladies, girls, ladies. The women's side of things. It's been a very interesting tournament. So many upsets and just complete and utter carnage. That's kind of the way it works on the WTA. It seems to have been that way for a long time. It is what it is. But you've got a couple of Ukrainians in the quarters. Marta Kostyak has taken on Coco Gauff. Second match of the day today, Craig. Second match on Rod Laver, Craig. Gauff has a 1-0 lifetime record. It went 3 sets last time. She is probably, Coco isn't probably. She's an 8.5 to 1 to a 10 to 1 favorite in this matchup. Does Kostyak have a chance?
Sure, why not? I don't think the courts are quite as favorable to Coco here as they are in, certainly when last year's Open, the courts were very favorable to Coco.
Very.
Which is fine. You know, that's fine. I don't have any issue with that. You know, if you're USTA, you have a marquee player there, then you set your courts up for that marquee player coming in to play at the biggest event of the year that you're hosting. So that's, you know, I'm good with that. But this is not the same hard court surface. So I do wonder if her game, when she becomes stretched against a better player, because she's not really played a top player yet in this draw. I don't think she's played a top player in Kostyak. I think that'll come next round when she either plays against Krejcikova or Sabalenka. But I think when the difficulty level goes up, it'll be interesting to see how well Gauff's game holds up. And I think that's going to be the defining factor in whether Gauff actually wins this tournament or not, is how will she play when she's faced with a challenge on a court like this? Can she adapt to the surface conditions, make her game work, and stop somebody whose game maybe is a little bit more naturally suited to these conditions? But I think Coco's probably a shoe-in for this one. I think she gets to the semi-final. It's going to be there where we ask the question of whether she can take it to the next level.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. Kostyak's played very well.
She has.
And they're playing for something, right? They've got a cause celeb. Thankfully, the number one Ukrainian female player is no longer in the draw, and we don't have to watch that. We won't have to watch her, Craig, because of the way things are in Europe and America and everywhere else with the TV. We can pretty much skip Alina the rest of the year if we want.
Well, it's not whether we want or not. In my case, might just not get a chance to be able to see anyway. So,
I know. I
didn't see her first round match either. It may have been screened, but it was only on for about 10 minutes before she retired.
Well, that's all she played. That's about the gist of the entire event. But as far as beating Coco, yeah, this is the surface you would do it. But you better serve big to do it. You know, her forehand isn't a weapon, but it's not a liability like it was. You know, they made some noise about Andy Roddick fixing her ball toss. And we talked about that here 4 years ago. You know, fix the forehand. We talked about that 4 years ago. Now they say they can't fix it, so they're just going to teach her how to live with it. Well, had you fixed it before you geniuses fell in love with her, she wouldn't have all these issues. But that's the problem, Craig. You got all these celebrity tennis coaches who couldn't fix a flat tire, let alone a tennis stroke. And rightly so. And that's fair because most of them don't know how to. That's not their thing. Most people don't go into tennis to be coaches. You know, it just kind of happens. I know I didn't. But I like Coco here in this one. I like Kostyak. She just seems like an affable young lady. I think she could take a set. She's not afraid of her. I mean, I saw that match they played in the last time they played, and they did go the distance. So we'll have to see. I think Coco Yeah, probably Coco wins in two sets, maybe. Maybe not three. But the match I'm really looking forward to on the female side of this mess is the last or the second to last one on our on Rod Laver Monday night, Tuesday morning, early in the States. And that's Barbara Krejcikova versus Aryna Sabalenka. Sabalenka has a 5-1 lifetime mark, Craig. But and she's also, what is she? Holy shit. Six and a half to one freaking favorite Sabalenka is. Isn't this the same girl who double faulted a lot?
It is, but she's made big strides over the last year, hasn't she? I mean,
Oh,
she
yeah.
won here last year. She's been so close to winning multiple other titles throughout the year at Slams. She's probably on paper the best and most complete player remaining in the draw. But it's a hard route to the final, right? If you're looking at this and you're in this section, you've got Sabalenka, Krejcikova, Gauff, and Kostyuk. And then you look at the top section, you're like, well, I think I'd rather be in the top section because there's a much easier route to the final if you've got a bit of consistency in your game. But no, I do like Sabalenka here. I actually think she's got a really good chance of winning the tournament. I think her game's quite well suited to this court. Her physicality works the court here, feels like it's quicker than the US Open. Those night conditions seem to be pretty good as well. I like her. I think that as long as as you pointed out, she doesn't go mentally missing at some point, I think she could be quite destructive here and she could retain the title.
Well, that's probably possible. That's probably possible. Krejcikova has played very well during this fortnight so far. And she's been a top doubles player for a lot of years. Her return is very strong as every part of her game is A plus. It's just not, or I should say A. Let's say A. It's just not elite. And you go up against somebody who has an elite weapon. Like Sabalenka in her serve. That makes it pretty tough. I do think Krejcikova can win a set, though. I think this goes 2-1. I think Sabalenka gets it. But at the end of the day, Sabalenka is just probably happy she doesn't have to play Kostyuk or Yastremska. Can you imagine what that would be like for her? Do you ask Victoria Azarenka what it's like to play a Ukrainian on center court? That's a tough one. So there was that one. Now we've got this matchup. This is the very first one of the night. Or I'm sorry, this is the first one Tuesday night. Noskova, Yastremska. Yeah, Yastremska is a qualifier. She's had an amazing run here. Noskova has had an amazing run of her own here. What do you like here, man?
I think Noskova could actually be very dangerous. She's only 19, right? A
I
lot of
know,
people
I know.
are not. There's a lot of Czech players on this women's tour, and for good reason. She's obviously not that highly ranked. I think she's ranked about 50, but she's only 19. There's a lot of game there. There's a lot of upside there. I think you have to respect that, and I really think that she's going to put herself into the semifinals. I think she's been really impressive this tournament. Obviously, she's the one that beat Swiatek in the third round, coming back from a set down to do so, which was just really really impressive. I think she's got a lot of fight in her. We've seen that so far. She's not won every match in straight sets, but she's battled back when she's been struggling with adversity, and I think we're going to see a bit of that again. And I think she will put herself into the semi-final, and that'll be a really, really impressive run for someone of such a young age.
Oh, for sure. But you know what? I'm not thinking for one second that that Yastremska is going to back down from her either. Noskov is just a 2-to-1 dog. That's the worst price, or 2-to-1 favorite. I'm sorry, Craig. Yastremskis, it looks like a good play from a betting standpoint.
Yeah, from a betting standpoint, I think, you know, you have to consider what you're being offered. And if you're being offered a better price on Yastremska, you might want to play that or some variation on that.
She'll have the whole crowd on her side, bro.
Well, she did against Azarenka, was it?
Well, of course.
But I don't know whether that's going to translate to having the crowd on her side against Noskova, because Noskova's 19 years old and she's Czech. You know, it's not a Russian. Or I mean, I would have been really interested to see how that stacked up if she had played what's the kid's name, Andreeva, the one that lost to
Yeah,
because the crowd really likes that kid, and she's Russian. So it's quite interesting. I don't know if the crowd will turn against Noskova because she's a young player. She's Czech. She's not a Russian or a Belarusian. I know the Ukrainians have been getting extra support, but I'm just not so convinced that they'll turn on Noskova the same way that maybe they did Azarenka.
Yeah, maybe so. We'll have to see, though. You know, we'll see. I don't know. I'll let you know tomorrow in my post, because I have that match on my docket. One more, Craig. One more. We're getting through this, partner. Remember when we used to do both sides of the draw, the full draw, the 128 on both sides?
Oh, man.
Remember that? That was crazy. We've been doing this show for 16 years. I have. Craig's been here for 12?
Something like that, yeah.
12, 13, something like that. So our last match for the day. Boy. This, I don't even know if I want to watch this one. Anna Kalinskaya against Quinn Wen Zhang. Zhang was rolling. This girl leads the tournament in aces, by the way, Zhang does. She's a 2.5 favorite. Does Kalinskaya have a chance?
Yeah, of course she does, but
okay, let me rephrase that. Are you gonna play a 2-1 dog against this Zhang?
No, I'm not. I think Zhang gets, she doesn't quite get the credit she deserves. You gotta remember, she's only 21 as well, by the way. She's not like she's been around for a long time. But because she's Chinese, I think a lot of the Western audience haven't really paid a huge attention to how quickly this girl's risen up the rankings.
Oh, I know.
21 years old, to be a Chinese player at that sort of ranking already, that's pretty special, actually. And there's just a suggestion that there could be something more to come from her. In the near future, she's already won singles titles on the tour. So you've got to realize that she's also a winner. She may not have posted the results yet at the slams. You know, she's never been beyond the quarterfinals, but she did reach the quarterfinals of the Open last year, which was her first time that she's reached the second week. Now we're looking at this and we're saying, well, she's in the quarterfinals again. It's pretty impressive for somebody at her age to start building that consistency. I think this is going to be her first semifinal. I think it might even be her first final.
I think she's going to win the tournament.
She could. She very well could.
She's, you know what? She has played so well, but it's her composure that I like. It's her attitude. And don't forget, her hero is Li Na. And Li is at this event. And she was doing an interview, and Lee snuck up behind her. And it was hilarious because, you know, she had just overtook one of Lee's records. And I think you're going to see a lot more of this young girl. I think you could see this girl win this whole thing. If I were you out there, I would put a few shekels on Zhang because she's going to be in the final. I would think so. I can't see any of these girls, or I should say this, I can't see any reason why she can't beat the remaining seven players in the field. I can't see a reason why. The only thing that would keep her from doing so is if she played against a Ukrainian, and because she's from China, you're going to hear, you know, she might catch a little flack from that deal. But outside of that, that would be the only thing stopping her, Craig. Great stuff today, partner. Well done.
Thank you very much. It's good to be back again.
It's good to be back. And we're going to do this a lot more often because we are, this week in tennis, will also be found at PassingShot.Productions. That's Danny Podolsky's site. He is a young man I met when he was 12. I was coaching after my first retirement when Craig told me to stay retired. And I went to Maine for 3 summers. You know, it was okay. But I met him there. And he asked me to help him with his broadcasting. He already knew that he wanted to be a broadcaster. And he wanted to be a writer. So we let him do that. He's been on this, not this podcast, but he's been on my radio show a couple of times. And they've got a great team of writers. We're going to be, Craig and I are going to be spending more time this season talking about some of the journalists out there and the pseudo journalists and all these other fools. Danny and his staff over there aren't pseudo anything. They're young. They're guys I know. I know Danny and his brother for a long time. And I know Ben Reamer, who's Danny's co-host, was also one of my former students. So I think it's amazing that they've done all these things. I'm also going to be writing a weekly column over there too, Craig. Just whatever it is I do, usually 10 things I liked about this week or didn't, whatever. But you can find this over there. Please do. Check out their podcast, Passing Shot, and enjoy the time over there. That's PassingShot.Productions. For Craig Doyle, I'm Phil Nasons. Thanks for listening to This Week in Tennis.
This Week in Tennis.